Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Sean.
Hello, hello. Hi, everybody. My name is Sean.
Hi, Sean.
I am a compulsive overeater and a bulimic and a food addict of all sorts. I'm so honored. Thank you for asking me. Driving over here was thinking about having done this about 5 years ago, and to be driving here 5 years later, the same size, not with my fingers down my throat, is something I just couldn't quite conceive of. And I'm glad I couldn't conceive of that, because it allows me to know that my program is about this 24 hours. I have walked into Overeaters Anonymous when I was 19, and I'm 47. And I have 8 years and 10 months, so that lets you know my struggle. My struggle is still bigger than my not struggle, and that's my story. And I'm going to share my story and what I do, and what I have learned along the way is that I've had to learn what works for Sean, connected to a higher power. And I spent a lot of times in these rooms wanting what works for you to work for me, and some of it has. And a lot of it didn't. So that's just part of my journey. So let me just tell you what it was like. I'm the oldest of three, and I was raised in, my father was mentally ill. My stepfather was an alcoholic. My mom was classic Al-Anon. And there was a lot of violence. And, you know, honestly, I don't have any happy memories of my childhood. Fear and terror is kind of what comes up for me around that memory base. But I'm grateful today that I don't have the cloak of victim from it. And that was a big trap for me. And the trap that kind of entangled food for me played out in, I remember really clearly, I don't have much memory before I'm five, but one of the memories I had, which was probably one of the more joyful memories, was discovering what this particular food item and this particular beverage, when I ate it, I remember feeling like that was love. Like it was sweet, and it made me feel good. And as I went back for more, it was consistent, because it made me feel the same way each and every time. And that is when that disease of food connecting me to my emotions started. I was a normal-sized kid that I look back and I see pictures of. My mom was really beautiful, and I had a sister who was an extrovert, and I was very, very shy and very much an introvert. So I say to you that I saw them as these two beautiful women, but I say that today knowing that I wasn't any less of a beautiful little girl. I just didn't fit in what they were. And so it fed a lot of my sort of, that, I don't know what, whether it's food or whether it's not food, the disease of something's wrong with me. And that played out a lot through even my, you know, early adult life. But sweets and sugar was kind of my go-to. And my sister never had to watch her weight, and my mom never had to watch her weight. But I didn't necessarily have that same metabolic makeup. So the switch clicked when I was about 12. And I guess developing, you know, as we do, my mom pulled me aside one day and said, you know, you better start watching your weight. And I remember saying to her, but I'm not fat. And she said, yeah, but you have my body type and you have to be careful. Well, I don't think that she said that in a malicious way, but I took it in the filter I took it in. And so so I started dieting. And I dieted with my mom. And, you know, I just, I started that love-hate relationship. Because up until that point, food really soothed me. But when it switched around that age, it became sort of this trap, because without food, I had nothing, or at least it felt like I had nothing. And with food, it became almost like this enemy. And so, you know, I was trapped in that dance very early. And you know, spent my high school years very uncomfortable, felt like I didn't fit in, and would eat, you know, a box of cookies on the way to school to deal with getting through school. And I, when I was 14, well, I thought I invented it, because I just had this idea, like, maybe I should just throw up. And so what happened, and this is the part of my disease that has created a challenging road for me, is there was something different and seductive that happened when I vomited. And that's a big part of my story. And I'm a volume eater. I always have been. I'm not a dainty flower in most of a lot of what I do. And so so I was never really successful in restricting or under-eating, but I would go as much as I could without eating, but it was always big in volume. And so when I purged, there was a numbness that happened that was equal and above and beyond when I would just get intoxicated by eating too much. So, and I think, you know, eating is very much connected to my emotions, connected to my rage, connected to my shame, self-hate, and thus began my dance with bulimia. And I was a self-induced vomiter. I didn't do any other forms of bulimia. I was never an exerciser. And I was kind of like, I would say, pretty hardcore, you know. So I would, you know, 40,000 calories, binging, purging, you know, bruises on my knuckles, losing hair, blood when I vomited. And I knew really early on, like, this was going to kill me. But I didn't have a safe place in my home. It was very dysfunctional. And so I remember seeing a movie about this mother who had bulimia, and I was like, that's what I have. Like, I didn't know that other people had this and that it was a disease. And I was living in New York, and I knew about AA, and so I found out that there was OA, and I walked up 57th Street to my first meeting, and you know, I've been privileged to be in program in different states, and I just remember being at that meeting, and they said, any newcomers, and, you know, after the meeting, they just wrangled us, you know. They were like, you're going to be a sponsor. I was like, but it was a great gift. And so this is what my road looked like in program, and it's not pretty, but I got abstinent right away from the bulimia. I ate three meals a day. I was about 30 pounds heavier. Didn't lose any weight when I was abstinent that first year. I didn't even know how to eat, honestly. I mean, I wasn't I was 19 years old, had never used makeup. You know, my mom didn't have the tools to give over the rite of passage to her daughters, so these things I didn't know how to do, and it really was the gift of program and people in the rooms. You know, I learned how to do so many things in my stretches of abstinence, and then when I was in the food and vomiting, I wasn't available for that kind of support because it was so wrapped up in my own self-abuse. But I always I think I told this story before, but when I moved out here a year after I got abstinent, and within a couple months I relapsed again. You know, my story has been these little, like I was, I always say it was I did the cha-cha. You know, I'd be like, I do two steps forward and I do one step back. And, you know, when I reflect now on those periods of time, because I've had a lot of, I call them redo opportunities. Everything in my last almost 9 years, I have gone through. I had opportunity to go through before, but I didn't. I went around, or I threw up over it, or I relapsed over it. And so the same stuff that I was meant to look at and heal and grow from just were available to me over these last, you know, I was like, oh gosh, here it comes. I had that 10 years ago. Yeah, I get it again. And a lot of my relapses came out of good. And I didn't really get that in those moments, but it's in this last part of my journey that I saw, like, see, I come from that background where I'm really good in crisis. So I kept thinking, why did I end up back in the food? Like, things were so good. And that's why I ended up back in the food, because things were so good. And, okay. So I struggled in these rooms, and I would have these periods of time, and I'm out here, and I got abstinent again. And so it became like a 1 year, then 1.5 years, and then 2 years, and then I'd relapse. And when I was about 30, I sought some outside help for a couple different support reasons. One was I didn't know really how to eat, so I sought some help in that way. And it was the first time that my plan of eating became part of this just don't throw up, because I was not throwing up, but I was cuckoo with the food. I was stoned a lot of times and not in my right mind. But that was what it was. And so I learned how to eat right-sized, which became a huge gift to me, for me, because I don't have a full gauge. I still don't have a full gauge. I know some people do, and I may, but I know what I need to eat because I always want to eat more. Always. I've never had but maybe a handful of experiences that I've actually eaten and for some reason, like, I actually feel like, whoa, you know. It just doesn't befall me. So I've got the compulsive overeater side of me, but I had that internal pressure of these women in my life, these right-sized, beautiful women in my life, in my family, that I couldn't be big. And yet I was bigger, you know. I was, you know, 25, 30 pounds more than I am now. So my struggle in the rooms. When I was in the food, I wouldn't be at a meeting. That was just how it worked for me. There was too much shame. I am so in awe of people that come here and their struggle, and I admire that in immensely. But that wasn't part of my story. So I've been married. I was married when I was 23, and for 12 years, he had a terminal illness, and you know, I mean, all the stuff that I chose to do in this early part. I was in the food, in and out of the food. It just, it was my coping mechanism. I didn't, so as I learned and a little bit more in these rooms, a little bit more, I could build, I just kind of built off that in terms of my survivor skills. Like, I didn't get 15 years ago when someone said this too shall pass. I was like, oh, no, it won't. I cannot stand another 30 seconds. But I can wrap my spirit around that today. Like, I may, on my walking across the street, I was like, gosh, I feel hungry. And I just thought, this is just fear. You know, this is not right. This is, I've taken care of myself today with food. This is right. You know, there might be a twinge of real hunger, but this is what my disease does, is tells me I'm hungry. You know, because I'm in an environment, I don't know people, I'm going to speak 40 minutes, oh my God. It's really, that's what it's really all about for me. And I also know that this too shall pass. And when I walked into the room and started talking to people, that passed. I'm not the hungry I was before the meeting. And that just took what it took for me. It took not trusting this too shall pass until I got in enough pain to trust. And then when I had the experience that it passed, I would go back to that experience when I was up against it again. And that's how I built this period of time. I did not have a big epiphany. You know, I know that the last time I had my relapse, it was not very long, but I just felt when I don't know what made a difference in that first 24 hours that has led me to this amount of time, because I never had more than 3.5 years. But I do know that I feel today the way I felt that first day, which is, I don't know that I have another one in me. So I got willing to sink a little bit deeper into all of what this program, the not just the physical, but the threefold disease. See, I would get abstinent, but I wasn't really going to do all that emotional work. And then the spiritual thing, well, I kind of like believed in a higher power, but I didn't want to take the time to develop a relationship, you know. And that's one of the things that has been so powerful for me, is I'd go with a fellow to lunch and spend 3 hours, but I wouldn't put that time into developing a relationship with this power greater than me that has given me these amazing opportunities to heal and grow. So I was willing to start to work on this threefold nature. And it took me kind of getting, I use the word sober. It took me getting sober with my food to give me clarity to trust doing the healing work, because I was really good at self-abuse on so many levels. And the idea that I had to start to work on this relationship with myself, that loving you was not going to help me love me. That loving me was going to help me love me. And that has been a baby step process over this close to 9 years. And I can certainly tell you today that, you know, it's not perfect, and I'm not in a place that I think I'm the bee's knees, but I really the word cherish comes up for me. Like, I cherish myself, and I'm aware that as I continue to stand up for the goodness that my higher power wants for me, that I'm going to be triggered by the voice, my best thinking, my step two thinking. The steps have been very, very important for me throughout my recovery. But in this last juncture, I really dug deeper in working. I work the steps on everything. I don't just work it on food. You know, I was on the phone with my sponsor last night, and, you know, I go into that spin of perfectionism, like I should be doing more, blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, this has been a very interesting 2012 for me. I lost two dogs, and both unexpected. 5 months ago, pretty much did the same thing, but 5 months ago it was a puppy, and December 20th it was my seven-year-old, and I was out of town for both of them, and I travel a lot for work, and, you know, to give you an example of this is this threefold nature of this disease for me is when the situation occurred with my first dog, I was in Istanbul, and I got a call at 5 in the morning from my mom, and when I got off the phone, she was going to call me back from the hospital, I looked up, and I just said, okay, God, I trust your plan. Because I've experienced, I've been willing to sit in my unknown, trust when I see other people like my sponsor or some other people, like they've gone through similar things. This doesn't mean that I don't have terminal uniqueness. So if somebody else has gone through something and, like, it's always better, like, I have to trust that I can do that too. And so I have been deeper in my 11-step work. Today I have a daily, I say meditation practice. I sit still for 15 minutes a day, focusing on my breath as an act of gratitude, as an act of thank you for higher power. If my mind wanders, I just acknowledge what it's doing, like, oh, thinking, come back to the breath. You know, just to be as present as I'm able to be, like anything. If I want a muscle, I got to exercise. If I want to be more present, I've got to practice presence. And it's given me a whole heck of a lot more opportunity to feel the presence of higher power in my day. I wouldn't have thought that. But like anything I've done, I've just been willing to say, okay, I'm going to commit to do this. And it was working a little bit of a deeper 11-step the last 2 years that, you know, I talk about my recovery in the sense that I'm willing to look at whatever I'm working on as far as the steps. I'm powerless over my two dogs that passed. When I got the second puppy, a week after I got him, they fought like they were going to kill each other. And I got him for her, and she hated him, and he was like a scrapper, and I was going, what do I do? You know, my best thinking is I got to get rid of him. That's like, you know, and what was going, you know, luckily because we have the we part, my sponsor just said, why don't you ride on the first tradition, which is our common welfare should converse, personal recovery depends upon OA unity. This is about unity in your family. So let's look at that. And what came up for me, and this is why I say, like, my experience is that I get these redo opportunities. So I'm in this home with two dogs that remind me of what it was like in my childhood. That I was the one that ran in and pulled apart the fighting parents when they were scrapping at each other and they were going for the jugulars. It was, you know, when there was pounding and fists. And these dogs went at each other like that. It wasn't just like playful. And I was triggered so deeply. But I was also in a place in my recovery process where I had started to build this very peaceful environment and home that I live in today. So when I did the writing and I read it to my sponsor, she took notes. And what she came, this is, she's just kind of mirrored back to me, this is what you want out of your home. Your best thinking is get rid of the dogs. Could there be some other options? So step three for me was I made the decision that I was going to have unity in my home, and I would do the things and trust that God's plan would evolve, whether that meant I had to get rid of a dog, but I was going to start to be a better parent to these dogs. And so thus began my journey. And, okay, it was about 7 or 8 months of complete and utter, the hardest work I've ever done. You know, I sent them away. I had to get into all this, you know, what does Cesar Millan say, you know, I rehabilitate dogs, I train people, you know. Well, I was needing a lot of training. And but what I got to see in reflection was this was, see, I never was an alpha in my life. The story in my head is I'm the ugly duckling. So I was the passive, what do you need? What can I do for you? Are you okay? You know, because I was taking temperatures everywhere. And then when none of that stuff really fixed me, I'd be, you know, mainlining sugar or something. And so I had to become alpha to these dogs. I was clearly not. And I had these actions I needed to do every day. Well, I've had 6 years of doing that with my food. Every day I plan, you know, like I learn, oh, wow, if I had a 2-year-old, I'd have to plan. So I learned I have to plan for me. So I had, you know, I reflect, what's my day look like? What do I do with food? You know, have my meditation. I'm doing all these things. So, oh, okay. Right, okay, so I have these things I need to do. And let me tell you, you know, on that second walk in the valley when it's 100 degrees, I'm melting down, you know. And I just, you know, made that decision. It's not up to my time would have been, can we just freaking fix this in like 2 weeks? And higher power's time is usually really different than my time. And usually the things that I'm the weakest on seem to take the longest from higher power at times. So I was diligent. That's all that the program tells me, consistency, diligence, healthy discipline. So that's what I had to do, is if I wanted this unity, I had to be willing to do this. So I did every day, feeling like I was like treading water, you know. And what has happened in my life in abstinence, and even in all of my hills and valleys, where I had some growth and then I demoralization and I'd have some growth, you know, I don't recommend that route personally, but it's my route. So I fast forward about 7 or 8 months, and I am gaining a lot of self-confidence in this doggy alpha thing, which I had the sense that this is an opportunity from higher power. This is not what I want to do. What I want to do with everything is look at it like the victim. Why is this happening? See, nothing ever goes right. I can't be happy, you know. When is the shoe going to drop? And, you know, the reality is, and my sponsor says, this is life. Life's going to happen. There'll be good times. There'll be bad times. You'll have challenges. How you want to seize that. And I choose today to call them opportunities and not to really call them challenges. And so I knew this was an opportunity. And when I saw and took that step three and then through these steps, there was something going on within as well. And so, you know, I blinked forward to like around that 7-month mark, and there was a slow like shift. But it was 2 months before my puppy got sick, and there was harmony in my home. And there were a few moments where they'd scrap, and I was not triggered. I could see the healing. And I mean, it was like two dogs scrapping. It wasn't my childhood. And that was a huge shift for me to be able to have that, like to see that healing, like that, like I don't have to carry that with me anymore, you know, that I can hear people fighting, and it may kind of rumble things, but I know the truth today. Like, that's not the truth. That's just people fighting. That doesn't have to bring that part of me up so much. So I won't go into a lot of details, but when I lost my puppy, he was on a respirator for about 9 days. He was in my mom's care, and she was devastated. And you know, I don't know if any of you guys relate to like that mom friction, that ongoing mom friction. I would not have expected it, but it was a huge healing thing for me and my mom, because she acted so fast with him. And when I made the decision that he needed to transition, I said, she was devastated. I was, deeper stuff came up for me. Let's put it that way. I was sad, but it was like hunks of gunk clicked and clicked and just came. So my mourning felt deeper. It felt like I was mourning my marriage. I was mourning, you know, stuff that I just wasn't able to show up and mourn. So I said to my mom, I want you to know that I never once thought you did anything wrong, that you actually saved his life. You gave me time. And she cried. She started crying. Because I see, like, here's the deal. Like, I have this gift of recovery. I have the gift to continue to grow and heal. And, you know, when I keep the focus on myself, it's amazing what happens to the people around me in my family. And there have been a lot of shifts, but you know, my mom's going to be 70 years old, and I don't know if she wants to go that deep. I don't know if that's her path, but I do know that what she did for that dog was the amends that she couldn't really give to me, because I grew up with a mom that, like, you know, I'd be bleeding, and she'd be like, "It's fine," you know. She just didn't have that going on. She was, all eyes were on the addict and not on the children, so. For her to have acted so quickly with this animal I was grateful that I was clear enough and clean enough in my brain that I was able to see the act of love. Instead of a couple 5 years ago, it would have been like, she never did that for me. But that's not how I saw it this time. And all of that is due completely to really sinking into the steps, being abstinent, and my part. You know, I love what I heard earlier about the partnership. Like, it's a partnership. I have to show up and do my work. And, you know, I'll tell my sponsees that I probably do more work now than I did 8 years ago. You know, it's just different kinds of self-care work, but, you know, what I'm understanding, and a prior sponsor gave me the gift of, if my higher power wants me to live such a huge, big life, and I am a very small thinker, and I'm a very isolator, and so as my life gets bigger, it takes me time to adjust, but where my life is today, it does have a sense of beyond my wildest dreams. I have a beautiful new little animal in my life, and it was a surprise gift from my mom. So the gift of love continues. And I was telling someone today that, you know, when this tragedy happened with my 7-year-old dog, I was in Germany, and again, I just said, you know, God, I know you have a plan. And the next, I was, you know, that was a hard day for me. The next day, I just kept watching pictures, looking at pictures of her, and my heart kept wanting to reflect on the gift of her in my life, not that she was out of my life. And that is, I know that that's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. And I'm a grateful member, and I'm a kooky girl with food, and I really believe in the we part and the steps, because I was kind of half measured there for many years. But the one thing that I love about these rooms is they're here. You know, they're consistent. I can leave. I can come back. I can, you know. But learning about myself and learning what works for me has been the key to ongoing healing and ongoing abstinence. So thank you very much. Okay, so I'm supposed to open up to any questions anybody might have. The question was, how do I handle now when things are good for me? I call my sponsor, and I'm aware that that's a weaker area for me, so I just did an extension project that has been in my home that I have worked on for 4 years, but it's actually happened, and I'm more uncomfortable now that it's happened. And so what I do is I spend, because I'm still in the mix of it, but I spend a certain amount of time every day moving things in to my home, and I don't want to. So a lot of it's contrary action for me. I'm committed to not pick up food today, so in this 24 hours, and if I feel uncomfortable, I use the tools a lot more. I pick up the phone, and I let people know what's going on in here. You know, I've got a story, it's kind of crazy, or I'm sitting here going, I'm so grateful, but I don't want to move. And usually when I do that, something leads to another, and I'm not thinking about, you know, the house anymore. I'm talking about a movie, you know. Talk about my conception and / relationship with higher power. It's not a person, it's not a thing so much as I use the word spirit a lot, universe, that there's just something bigger than me. And I'm triage, so I really quickly go into, I got to fix it. So when I have, when I sit quietly and I ask myself, you know, when I look at that food item and I'll say, what would God's will be for me? I know it's the loving answer. So I talk to this power. I write sometimes to this power. But I really feel it inside. It's not an outside entity. Even though I look at a tree or I look at the ocean, I know it dwells within. So as I've started to take time to care about myself more, I feel like the heart of spirit feels just bigger in my being. So it's not me, but it's in me. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how it kind of feels for me these days. Oh, anyway, thank you very much.